Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, and welcome to another Concierge Coaching Show, Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Justin Nimmergood. Justin, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Excited to be here.
Excited to have you with us. Well, we have a great show today. We have a special guest with us. I'd like to introduce our guest, Sylvia Hubbard, and let her introduce herself, give an introduction, and how she is very active in the treatment space. And we're going to talk about how addiction treatment and recovery interacts with the coaching space today. So, Sylvia, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bruce. Thank you for having me on.
Yes, absolutely. So if you could give us an overview of what all you do, what you're doing, and tell our listeners about Addiction Campuses and what's going on.
Okay. Well, again, thank you. My name is Sylvia Hubbard. I am the Director of Business Development for Addiction Campuses in the southwestern region of the U.S. I came into this field about 17 years ago, working for a variety of treatment centers. I work on the front line, helping people get into treatment. I work with their families. I have worked with hospitals and other organizations all across the country. I've been in the, like I said, I've been in the mental health field for over 17 years now. And I traveled from London to America via Miami, and landed here in Texas, where I connected with Bruce maybe, I'd say, about 10 years ago now.
Probably about 10 years ago now.
So working with Addiction Campuses, I facilitate treatment specialists in four different states. I have Texas, Oklahoma, Colorado, and New Mexico.
That's quite a region. So it's that is a geographic region. So it's
small patch of the country for sure.
Yeah, a lot of landmass there for sure. Mm-hmm. So well, that's fantastic. One of the reasons why I wanted you to come on the show today is because we have gone back for many years, mm-hmm. and as a coach and also as a therapist, but also as a coach that is an entry point for many people who are interested in going into or who may need addiction treatment services of varieties. It's important to have folks like Sylvia that I can refer to and other coaches and professionals can refer to when the level of service that we're providing here, the boots on the ground level, they may need a more higher level of service that exceeds what we're able to achieve either by coaching and or counseling or psychotherapy. So it's, you know, just been a pleasure to have you as a resource out there for us to refer to. And so I think, you know, you bring a level of care and compassion, mm-hmm. to this space that I'd like for you to talk about, because I think that embodies not only what you represent, but who you are and what you're doing for your company as well is extending that care and compassion. So let's talk a little bit about that compassion.
Well, coming into this space, I want to make sure that every person that I connect with or have interactions with are able to have the services that we offer at Addiction Campuses at all levels. My compassion and my love for the work that I do, it all stems from, you know, caring, from being an adult child of an alcoholic, not actually realizing how it impacted my life and how it impacted my siblings. So coming into this field allowed me to understand what families go through, understand that not everybody knows what addiction is. Not everybody understands what the process for going to treatment looks like. And again, treatment with the work that you're doing could be a sidestep for the coaching and the concierge coaching that you do. So my role is to make sure that addiction campuses, Treehouse, Swift River, the Bluffs, Turning Point, these are all of the campuses that we have under our umbrella, can help every level of client. Yeah. Every level of client, so that we can make sure that we're there to help them. One of the other one of the other things that I like to do is make sure that families have resources. I work very well with families. I speak to mothers who have no idea what's going on with their loved one. When the patients come home, they have no idea what the next step is. I work very well with our alumni group. I work very well with people, professionals like yourself, to help guide them on their next journey.
Well, it sounds like you're doing a lot of coaching yourself. You know, I mean, you really are so active with the clients and families and those things, and what a great job that is, I think, right? Mm-hmm. To be in a field where you can help others and connect others to healing, whether it be the client themselves and or their families, because mm-hmm. this is a systemic and a family type illness. So I think that's great that you know, you yourself are doing a good bit of coaching in a way. So so yes, I know that that Justin, you know, has experience.
Yeah.
Business world.
Yeah,
some of the things you're seeing out there in the C-suite or anything. What are your thoughts, Justin?
Well, I'm seeing a lot with it, and so, you know, without taking up too much of Sylvia's time, and I'll share a couple, a bit here, that being in the corporate environment today is challenging, right? And being an entrepreneur, whether an entrepreneur, you know, in the corporate context is a challenging demand of today's day and age. I can remember when I was at Cisco and I was tasked with just a million things at a million miles an hour. And because we as humans are now more is asked of us, the bar has been set much higher. Mm-hmm. It's leading to more and more individuals that are seeking, unfortunately, poor choices, right? They're making poor choices. And then by de facto, they're needing more and more help in this area, right? So the specialization, for example, yes. that you focus on, Sylvia, is so necessary. I was just talking to a gentleman yesterday from a large telecom provider. I'll leave him nameless, but that's been going through, you know, months and months of psychotherapy help, and it's just it's so essential, right? We have to nurture and foster the talent that's out there in the marketplace today, and each and every person has a unique gift. So I don't know if, you know, what I'd be kind of curious about along that vein is, you know, what are you seeing, Sylvia? And are you seeing a similar transition right now kind of happening in the marketplace, or what's your perspective on that?
Yes, I am actually seeing a lot of that happening more and more. Like I said, I started in the field 17 years ago. It was straight alcohol and drugs, and it was very limited to small numbers and everybody just being quiet and saying, I'm going to get some help. And then as the years have gone on, we have destigmatized addiction. We've destigmatized treatment. More and more people are standing up and saying, hey, I need help. So because that trend is moving, there's also that trend of different drugs coming in to the space, coming in in the market, where the coping mechanisms that were open to us prior are still there, but there are more drugs that can actually help alleviate some of those pains. Do you find that too, Bruce?
Right. Yes. As a matter of fact, there's a segment of my coaching practice that does utilize some of the medical assisted treatment alongside the coaching. Sylvia, some of the things you and I have discussed about some of the executives that C-suite players, that they won't self-identify as a rehab candidate at first.
That's right.
They will not. Many here that I see in my practice won't do that. And so then they will, however, hire an executive coach.
That's right.
And luckily for me, you know, having a background in addiction and compulsive behavior, as well as being, you know, a licensed counselor, but even going with the coaching paradigm, they'll hire a coach, and then they'll also have their own personal physician or internist in tow many times. Mm-hmm. Now, that person can take the shape of as a psychiatrist, but I'm finding more and more these are kind of internist, family practice doctors that are utilizing naltrexone and you know, medically assisted treatment to do that. So yeah, that's a that's another trend, Justin, that we're seeing is this trend for, you know, medically assisted treatment as well as the coaching. Now, that said, and Sylvia, I'm going to want you to talk about some of the medically assisted treatment things that I know you all offer. But that said, is from the coaching perspective, or from my perspective as the coach, sometimes, you know, we're the person, you know, in coaching, we let the person set their own goals. You know, we believe as coaches that the person has the answers within them, and that good questions make good coaches, and therefore this experience and this journey. Well, you know, when we have an addiction issue in there that continuously is there, it's a thorn in their side, and it's absolutely hindering and blocking their growth and development. You just have to sometimes, you know, get out the handkerchief and the white one and wave it and say, you know, man, you know, we just have to do something different here. And then we call in professionals like Sylvia to assist us in a placement that can meet their needs. So tell us a little bit, Sylvia, about what some of the medically assisted, medication assisted treatment programming that y'all offer.
Okay. And just to make sure that I've answered your question, I want to say that this moving through the trends have gone from, like I said, just addiction to now medically assisted help with addiction and mental health
as well.
So with that coming along, we offer those type of services at a couple of our programs, which is Swift River and The Bluffs.
What states are those in?
Massachusetts and Ohio. Those are up there. So Turning Point also has, which is in Mississippi, has a MAT program. And basically what it does is help to decrease the severity of the withdrawal symptoms. It lessens or helps to eliminate the cravings, and it also promotes a more focused state of mind during therapy sessions. Bruce and I was talking earlier that it also helps to extend periods of sobriety and promote successful recovery. When we were saying that the coaching not only encompasses treatment or addiction or alcoholism, coaching helps people get their life back on track. It helps them with their finances. It helps them with their families. It helps them with their wives. But coming in and having a coach like Bruce, they're then faced with, oh, by the way, you know, I am drinking a little bit more than I should be, and I don't know if this is the reason why this is happening. They come up with all sorts of different excuses for why something might be happening.
And we'll talk about coaching on the back end post release, which is, but on the front end, you know, there have been times in my practice where I'm coaching somebody, you know, they're on the Vivitrol or naltrexone. There's several dosage range you can do, and then, man, they continue to drink on that or use on that. Mm-hmm. That is just a statement, you know. I mean, it's, you know, it's almost like being on, I mean, on a, like a stimulant and then still eating, you know, 20,000 calories a day on a, and you're on a large dose of a stimulant. Like, wow, that's kind of hard to do. That's dedication to the cause. And so, you know, so we're when, you know, having that medication. Now, mental health is a whole separate issue because, you know, we really don't do mental health coaching. We don't coach people out of schizophrenia or whatever, you know what I mean? Or another access one disorders, but with the substance use, we do the coaching. And then to see that contrast, inside of the medically assisted programs. And I think those are actually good locations for those programs, because a lot of the clients that I see here and in California and somewhat East Coast, going to a location in the middle or what have you, right, is just a way to kind of get away from, well, you can speak, get away from other influences and have that anonymity and be able to focus on the treatment.
That's right. It's a, you know, remove, get away from the people, places, and things. Be in the C-suite as well. There are lots of people in the community that know them. They might bump into someone at treatment. They might have a family member see them when they're at treatment. Everything like that. So what we have is those states. It eliminates that
exposure
to people in the local area. Mm-hmm. So once they travel and go to, let's say, the Swift River in Massachusetts, they can actually focus on getting the drugs or the alcohol out of their system. Not everybody, but in many cases, the process of recovery requires some medical help. And the use of medications helps the client focus on what they're supposed to be working on. So when we taper them down, get them to a level that they can then continue to work, because it might be needed for them to continue out. That stigma that I talked about earlier, it was all about abstinence-based, no alcohol, no drugs. Whereas now we're finding that, you know, there has to be some form of, well, not has to be, there can be some form of medically assisted help to help a person continue with life, continue with their daily chores, because the mental health side of it, the chemical imbalance, mm-hmm. they just can't kick it.
Exactly.
Well, and along those lines too, it's interesting. So I don't know if I've even shared this with you, Bruce, but I'm 5+ months into I call it a cleanse. I'm calling it a cleanse publicly, but really it is a bit of sobriety, right? Is of no drinking alcohol. Okay. And you know, what's interesting, Sylvia, and it's along the lines of the C-suite, and I have a follow-up question to this topic or this framework topic is, you know, when people go in and they quit something, they quit doing something, the mm-hmm. quitting the habit alone will cause a domino effect. Quitting right. the habit with some sort of substance that's associated with it is going to cause a whole nother subset of domino effect items. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think, and I beg to kind of put a bold statement out there, that there's a level of psychosis that people will go through. Maybe not, you know, the deep, dark psychosis that we think about or read about in the books or see movies about. But mm-hmm. that happens when you're detoxing yourself mm-hmm. of substances of any kind. And I think that alone scares the bejesus out of everyone. You know, any comments on that, and just sort of, I guess specifically around the C-suite piece, if for the listeners out there, you know, that are listening, whether C-suite or not, what types of things should they be tuning into that would be good indicators that they should, you know, possibly go look to get more help?
Well, I'm not a clinician, and I know Bruce is right here. Bruce can actually answer that for you. So, but it for me, and what we know about addiction is that obsession to drink and drug that will not go away. They're constantly thinking about it, constantly, you know, even sometimes people say they can smell alcohol. And or they dream about it and they actually believe that it's real. So let me put you back to Bruce, because he can answer that more so. But from my experience, from what families and patients have told me that once they're in recovery, they lose the obsession to drink and drug.
Right. I mean, and you're spot on, Sylvia, and also the fact that people will lose control. They're thinking about it all the time, but they're thinking about how they're going to do it, when they're going to do it, how they're going to procure it, from who, when, how, what time of day, when's the best time, where am I going to store it, am I going to hide it? You know, and so it is, it can turn into this all-encompassing thing where the person starts on the low end of using more than they thought they would. Now seeing negative impact on their work, seeing negative impact on their health, negative impact on their family. They're abdicating other roles mm-hmm. in their lives. Here we go. So, right, it just kind of grows from there. I have this one challenging client who contends, he goes, I'm a social heroin user. And a guy, you know, shoots a bump of once a month, and he's like, pounding his chest, you know, like, see, I told you, Bruce, I'm a social heroin addict or something. Like, that's a kind of an interesting. So, whew, it doesn't get in the way.
Never heard of that one before. A social heroin user.
No, it's a horrible thing. You know, this person, person has some other interesting psychological issues as well that are running into that title. But that said, so, you know, but something I wanted to ask you, Justin, you know, in our old guard, new guard dynamic that we have, what are you seeing with the millennials, you know, coming into the, there's a millennial in the room who's looking at me like, so he's got this, we have a gentleman with us here and he looked millennial at me. Anyway, so sorry about that, man. He's doing good. He's fine. He's making sure I stay inside the line here. But what do you see with the millennials in terms of, I mean, are they coming in for service? Are they having issues with, like in the C-suite or the junior C's, you know, coming in? Are they having these issues, Justin?
I'm not seeing that, actually. And I think that's another whole, you know, when we say C-suite, we should really be mindful that a lot of these, you know, C-suite folks are young millennials that are founders or owners of their own ventures. Mm-hmm. They're C-suite in startups and startup-like communities. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I'm not really seeing that. And it's a shame. And it's a shame because what I've seen is that stigma has been passed down from, you know, obviously some of the older generations, not to call them out, you know, but I certainly, you know, experienced that growing up, and it's just something, you know, you sweep under the rug and you don't really talk about, and you demonstrate a level of positivity and foresight and, you know, I'll get through it and stick to itness, you know, but I'm not seeing that. Unfortunately, what I see is a millennial generation that's just overwhelmed with options mm-hmm. and overwhelmed with bad options, for that matter. I mean, I can literally walk outside my door right now and I could get any drug on the street within a few phone calls or a few paces of the walk. And I'm sure most people could say that, but especially in the millennial community, I mean, the advent of like some of the, you know, ecstasy and some of these types of, you know, other drugs that are coming out, the millennials, by and large, think of those as party drugs. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of millennials that use those drugs readily as quote unquote party drugs, or as you shared with your example, Bruce, I'm a recreational heroin user, right? Once a month.
Yeah.
And so I think the millennial, by and large, group says, oh, well, these are just fun drugs. They're party drugs. And they're failing to see the association between, you know, maybe it's a party drug or back in the day it was intended to be that way. But if you're doing something habitually, regardless of what drug it is and what effect it has on you, that's a habit. And by de facto, that is an addiction.
Right.
And so I'm unfortunately not seeing them kind of, you know, tapped into that. I don't know, Sylvia, are you seeing similar things, or do you get a lot of, you know, millennial patients that come in?
Yes, we do. I'm not going to say universal, but it's a failure to launch. Basically, that it's accepted as the norm. until the norm becomes a problem. But then when that norm becomes a problem, then the consequences then come into place. Then once the consequences come into place, they no longer have the choice whether they want to use or stop. They have to continue. So that's the point where I come in. I come in with the families. I come in with the parents, and they say, you know what? This behavior is like, it's changed. We've seen it change over time. And that's when we catch them. That's when we say, okay, we need to reach down, hold, pull them up and say, you need some help. You need to go to treatment. If they're honest with themselves and they know things have been going wrong, they know that they're hanging out and it's becoming habitual, like you said, they cannot stop. They've lost the ability to stop. That's when we step in as professionals to say, okay, let's do something.
You know, and the thing I ask myself too, Sylvia, and thanks for sharing that, is you know, obviously we're not going to get into politics certainly today, but obviously with, you know, some of the new regulations or you know, new codes of ethics and within corporations and certainly the laws, as they've shifted, have you seen a shift in the market and specifically with your treatment center? Of more or less or fewer or different cases coming through as a result of some of, you know, obviously most notably, you know, what we've seen with recreational marijuana across the country, you know, over recent months and years. Are you seeing a shift? And if so, what shifts are you seeing?
Well, again, not to get into politics, but that failure to launch group that I spoke about earlier, they're going to where they can get drugs legally. But eventually, they have to come home. When they come home, they're coming back to places where the drugs are not legal. And that behavior, again, stems from the overuse, the over-abuse to becoming addicted. So that's what I'm seeing. That's what I have families calling me, telling me, well, my loved one wants to go here, they want to go there, you know, and it's like, well, is that going to be the best thing for them? This is where Bruce comes in.
Well, yeah, and what I'm seeing, I mean, what is today's date? It's 24th of September, 2018. So I'm saying this for the podcast on record, so somebody could pull the news headlines that are out there today. And I think that one of the things I'll bring up in a Me Too, with this Me Too culture, is that, wow, I mean, companies and these code of conduct issues that are inside these companies, we're talking young companies too, Justin. I mean, startups, whatever else. I mean, and so some of these Me Too issues, when they get to HR, or they get to the Office of General Counsel issue, you know, to that level for an investigation to take place on some allegation of inappropriate conduct that's contiguous to the workplace, and then there's alcohol or some substance involved, there it is. You know what I mean? So there's in the executive, you know, this is the Concierge Coaches show, not necessarily the EAP Coaches show, but this is the Concierge, and we're seeing that at that level. Well, there's some sort of misconduct that gets perpetrated. And that misconduct, not just Me Too, it could be anger management issues. I've had to bail executives out of jail for being surly with police officers and losing those scraps and altercations. Just a plethora of things that these folks are doing in the conduct. But sometimes when there's alcohol or other substances involved, then that's where, you know, I think that's just another on-ramp for services and treatment and coaching and those things. And I think, you know, there are things about people's character that lend them to make choices, either rule bending or rule breaking or then boundary violating behaviors. But that's a whole nother show or aspect of this. But anyway, let's talk a little bit about what happens after treatment. I know that folks can come to your facilities for, actually talk about the lengths of stays, the various lengths of stays possibly, and then and give us an overview of what might happen after treatment.
Well, there are varying lengths of stays, as you said. There's a 30-day program, there is extended care programs, there's longer-term programs. Now, those programs and those times are determined by the clinicians when they're actually working with the actual patient. So they will not be there one day less than they're supposed to be, and they won't be there one day more than they should be. You know, so we don't put a specific time frame on that. Depending on the drug use and the length of time, it depends on their age. There are all sorts of criteria that need to be taken into place. So we have inpatient level of treatment, which encompasses detoxification. We also have PHP level of treatment, which is partial hospitalization programs. And we have intensive outpatient, which is also known as IOP levels of care. So that can go from a 30-day all the way through to 9 months to a year. Now, when the patient and a family decide that they want to go that long, that would be in a lower level of care. And it would also maybe encompass some of the concierge coaching that you're doing, because when they're not in an inpatient setting, the PHP level and the IOP level is outside of treatment. So they would be coming back in to get services periodically. It could be on the PHP level, which is 5 days a week, 30 hours, or it can go down to IOP level, which is 6 hours a week, 3 days a week, you know. Each one is done individually and it's done separately. Now, we also offer, we work with and offer services for case management, long-term case management. We don't physically approach them. We are working with them. We offer the services that will get them to help with housing, when help with work, help with see how they're doing with their recovery, things like that. So again, that sort of comes back into the coaching that you would do, Bruce. So we would help them with the treatment side, whereas the longer term side would be on the coaching side for you to continue their transition to a healthier way of life.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that I've noticed about your programs. It's not like, okay, you're out the door and, you know, here's your aftercare therapist. Goodbye. And, mm-hmm. and so how long do you all check in with your former patients post release from the core part?
Well, we have alumni coordinators. We have recovery advocates that check in with the patients as long as they can continue to work with them. Because basically everything is done on how the patient reacts to somebody following up with them. Are they doing the right thing? People also say to me, well, what is the best length of time, or what does recovery look like? What are your statistics? Basically, the statistics could be 100% if they do exactly what we recommend. So, right. You know, recovery could be a lifetime deal if they do exactly what we say. If they choose to, their addiction then resurfaces, mm-hmm. or their behavior changes, then that can impact whether their sobriety or their coaching or their work with aftercare continues. So everything is dependent on the state of mind, whether they're financially stable, whether their family life is good, whether their work life is good. Everything intertwines. It's a bit like how you were saying earlier about your cleanse and the obsessions and working with the different executives at all level of care. Everything has an impact on where each person goes.
Oh, exactly. And the choices that they make.
Mm-hmm. Right? Awesome.
Yeah, good. Well said.
Yes.
And you know, I thought I would escape that hook, you know, and for you, listen to this, Justin, in 1980, God, hold on. Let's get the time machine and the DeLorean out. 80, 485, I opened a charter hospital in Austin, Texas called Charter Lane. I was one of the detox managers back in the day. They're going to ship me to Macon, Georgia and make a zombie out of me. But seriously, I went to grad school and said, but all that to say is, you know, and it would be, you know, well, this program didn't work. Mm-hmm. This program didn't work for me. You know, well, you know, and it's not the program. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to be a coach, because as a coach, it's not my program. Mm-hmm. It's your program. These are your goals, right? You're the one setting the goals, mm-hmm. not me. Like, mm-hmm. I'm helping you set your goals. You have a goal, to, you know, when we're going to help you get to, right. to your goals generated by you. And so I thought I was off that hook until they start using them to violate their own goals. And I'm like, man, they still blame me. Well, if you're such a good coach, I would, no, they don't say that. I'm teasing them. I'm trying to make light of a bad situation. That's not good, but. So yeah, it is an interesting, you know, conundrum of sorts when we do talk about addiction and or mental illness to some degree, but certainly the addiction piece of this and but I think, you know, that coaching piece, mm-hmm. when somebody has come through coaching and kind of not been able to adhere to their own goals and have to go to a higher level of care, man, that they can look at the mirror, I can look at the mirror and say, look, we did everything we could within the scope of what you could do on your own or with my mm-hmm. assistance. Mm-hmm. But really, at this time, we need to have some other assistance mm-hmm. points in here. So
it's that unknown variability.
Right.
You know, that unknown variable there where we just don't know when it's going to happen, if it's going to happen, and how it's going to happen. We just don't know.
Right, right. So, but folks like yourself and the facilities you represent are there to help. And also, now I've talked about the concierge mm-hmm. coaches, and I've talked about C-suite, but you guys service
all levels of care. We cover our programs run from 18 and older. We have clinicians, we have case management, we have addiction specialists. Each patient gets three clinicians that work with them. We have discharge planners from day one. They're trying to set up what's going to happen when they leave our program. Our programs are set for success. We set the program so that the patient has the best tools available when they leave us, because we don't want them back. We don't want them back in treatment. We want them to go out and be productive members of society. We want them to go back to their lives of being the owners, being the managers, being a good mother, a good father, a good brother or sister. We want them to be able to identify when things aren't going right, that they need to get some help. I think that also goes back to that question that you asked earlier. When do we recognize when someone needs some help? It's we give them the tools so they can recognize when they need help. We can't have, you know, some of them would love to stay with our case managers. And they don't want to go home sometimes. Can we stay here? Like, no, you have to go back. Hence the reason we send them to places like Bruce. And he will then say, okay, you've gone through treatment. You've gotten all your tools. Let's use those tools to interact with the coaching, interact with the life skills, interact with getting back to work, interact with working with your family. Now, use those skills to segue into all of those different segments. Because if you don't recognize that something is going wrong, or if you don't have the ability to recognize that something's wrong, this is where you need help. And this is where a counselor, case manager, the aftercare, the follow-up, everything like that comes into play.
Right. And that is one thing that in my practice, I have always, you know, and that's why I've been in business as long as I've had, or I have been in business, is because whenever somebody does come out of treatment, I really get involved with that aftercare plan. I really do treat what the releasing professionals have to say as gospel, you know, like, this is the truth. This is what's going on. And then when the person releases, we have a coaching plan that encompasses all those things in the release plan. Now, the person obviously has free will to make choices. Are they going to do it? Are they not going to do it? But at first pass, I'm going to I'm going to, I hate to say the word religiously, but there it is. I'm really going to go by what the treatment team had to say, and then, you know, have that as a starting point, because these are the professionals that, you know, that know the most about your present condition, and to carry that baton. I know that just, you know, it can be very aggravating for hospitals and centers, that then when they release to the aftercare therapist, it's almost like they throw whatever out the window and starting from day one. And that's not what certainly the model I came out of, because I was the guy that was in the treatment center, you know, back in the day, you know, who would be disgruntled or whatever, or, you know, when I would see an aftercare person not follow our direction. So I have the utmost of respect for what you guys do when you have a release plan and carry that forward along with the elements of life, the spheres of health and other spheres that the person needs for self-esteem and growth and developing their role and in their business. Sometimes I'll do business coaching and where are they going and what are they doing? And, you know, if they're in sales or if they're into some other area, you know, growth and development or sales or accounting or analytics. I mean, you know, different people do different things, and doing that vocational piece is an integral part to their recovery. And, you know, thank goodness, you know, as a licensed professional counselor in Texas, they make you do vocational, you know, there's a vocational piece to that license. And it, years ago, because I came out of a clinical psych program, I kind of cursed that. But man, now, you know, I find myself doing a lot of vocational facilitative work in the coaching and the aftercare and looking at that. So, all right. So, Justin, what reactions do you have out there?
Well, I think, you know, it's like the old adage. I mean, the journey, you know, only begins upon completion, you know, of anything we do, you know, out there in the world. And to me, that's, a lot of people can do the initial thing, right? You know, it's like the New Year's diets, right? Or New Year's workout plans. That always trips me up, right? And what is the failure rate is like 80-something% for those. And why is that? It's because the intentionality behind it is hey, it's the new year. It's, you know, the stigma of the new year. I need to be a new me. So I think a lot of that, you know, is consistent, right, in anything that we see. And I would imagine that holds true with what you do. I mean, said differently, we're not seeing anything, you know, new, you know, from a behavior perspective of people. Then again, when they diet, when they eating habits, you know, addiction is along the same lines, right? It's all about these routines.
Right. And as you're saying, it's about routines. We have a little, it's called a little plan. It's called the balanced life. It's like when they're ready to start on a path of complete transformation, staying engaged in the community, focusing on living life. We want their life of recovery where they can thrive, finding that next level, finding new life that can happen in the privacy of their own home, as well as, you know, being on addiction campuses with us. You know, we have self-improvement programs designed to help redefine life by developing a balance beyond sobriety. You'll maintain the principles of long-term recovery. You heal relationships. You find forgiveness. You renew your self-esteem. You discover your spiritual connection and explore how you can take that career further and start living each day with the intention and purpose like never before. So that's one of the things that we really, really encompass over addiction campuses and what we really, really strive for.
That's excellent. That is a very holistic approach, mm-hmm. of course, you know, and well said and articulated. And that's good to hear, you know, and obviously that is the path. There's a path of recovery mm-hmm. that people need to take. And that path has a lot of different, you know, aspects to that path that we have to acknowledge. And if we don't acknowledge those, and then we could be setting the person up for failure upon release. And we certainly don't want to do that. And I think that's why the engagement and the level of engagement and assessment that I know y'all do very well is so important because time is of the essence, you know, on these stays, and we want to get a thorough picture and a really good sense of what this person can do to get to a better place in a timely manner. Right. So I applaud that, and that's, you know, I know you guys do great work in that regard. So I think it's a good fit. You know, I think, you know, coming here today and actually seeing you and talking to you about this, you know, it really just affirms, you know, a great connection between what you guys do and coaching, whether it be a coach like myself referring in the beginning, referring to you guys because of the client not able to sustain their own abstinence or substance use goals, to all the way to aftercare upon release. And there have been treatment centers that have referred to me. I never knew them on the front end, but they had several in California, like, hey, we got this guy, he lives in the Dallas area, and he's coming your way, and would you mind working with them? And they know that I'm going to toe the line with their discharge planning, and right. I'm like, sure, you know, let's do it, and that's fine too, you know what I mean, because we have a script there, and we know what to do and where to go, and, you know, set that journey, and those are fun as well. So alrighty then, well, we got a couple of minutes left before the show winds up. Sylvia, can you go ahead and tell our listeners how they can reach you and or Addiction Campuses, and give us all the great contact information.
Okay. All right. Well, again, I'm with Addiction Campuses. We have several different programs. We have the Treehouse here in Texas. We have Swift River in Massachusetts. We have the Bluffs out in Ohio. And we have Turning Point in Mississippi. Now, you can reach me directly on my cell phone. And you please feel free to give anybody my cell phone number. I will answer the phone if I'm awake. Now, that's 214-927-8352. But if I'm not able to answer the phone in those sleeping times, you could always call us directly on our 24-hour hotline. That's 888-512-3321. Or you can go directly to addictioncampuses.com and you can look us up. You can have a look at the different programs. But, you know, reach out to Bruce. Reach out to me. That's what we're here for. We're here to individually work with everyone and give them the best chance of survival.
Now, do you have an email that you can share? I was just curious. Or, well, let's go with the phone number again. If you don't have an email, let's go with the phone number. Say your phone number one more time.
My personal phone number is 214-927-8352, and the 24-hour helpline is 888-512-3321.
No worries.
Yes, but you know what? We can also do a personal chat on the website. So if somebody wants to reach out directly, they can go to Addiction Campus's website, and they'll have someone that'll pick up the phone and do a personal chat with them.
That's good. That's good too. It's good to have those various portals of entry, because some people are more willing to call, or we're more willing to write, or maybe willing to chat with somebody or whatever, and having those connection points. Yeah, and folks, yeah, don't hesitate to contact myself or even Justin. We can point them to your area, to your programs, and see if there is a fit there. And it sounds like there is. It sounds like you guys offer a wide variety of services to a wide variety of people, and I really like that. I think that's so important because not only do we work with, in my world, you know, not only working with the executives, but they have children, or they have, you know, some of the old boomers like me, Justin, have kids that are.
Be careful. You're time stamping yourself now, Bruce.
I am, man. Hey, I've got to, man, because people on the new media are going, who's that old guy next to that nice looking guy on the ride? And hey, but anyhow, just got to call it the way it is. Well, great. Sylvia, thanks for coming in today and sharing with us, you know, your work, your experience, and you can tell, and I'm sure Justin, you can feel it too, just her passion and her desire. Sure.
Thank you, Bruce. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Sylvia.
Thank you.
All righty then. Well, you know, it's been another great show here on the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. And folks, come by our website at LA Talk Radio. And on Channel 2, we have our own website. And all the shows that we've ever done on the Concierge Coaches Show are archived there with show summaries. But also, more notably, we're on iTunes. So you can go to iTunes and go to the Concierge Coaches Show. We've paid it forward so people can just download the show for free. And you can bring up any show that we've ever done. And here in a few days, this show will be entered into the iTunes platform along with the little bit of a summary note and some things on information for you guys to read as well. So we're always looking forward to that. Come by our Facebook page and Facebook at Concierge Coaches Show. And we may have some more media here coming up in the future, but those are the contact points. Well, Justin, welcome aboard and look forward to another exciting week next week.
Yeah, likewise. Looking forward to it. It's going to be a fun ride.
All right, brother. All right, well, with that said, have a great week, everybody, and we'll see you here next time on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Take care.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.